You're listening to the best of Talkin' Sports with Byron, an on-demand audio presentation of RedPeachSports.com and ESPN977.com.
Thunder, baby, bringing it to you every week live from the Coldwell Banker Group 1 Studios in West Monroe. We're Talkin' Sports on ESPN 97.7 FM. It's you and me. I'm B.
And guess what? I'm D.
Byron Avery, DJ Davis, Coach DJ Davis.
Yes, sir.
Joining you every week, talking sports here on ESPN 97.7. As always, joined by the man in control, Mr. John Tabor.
Tabor.
Good afternoon,
good morning,
gentlemen.
Sir. Good afternoon. I'm sorry. Afternoon. It's morning when I get here, afternoon when I go on. So, man. Got a great lineup for you today. Fantastic lineup, actually.
I'm excited.
I am too.
I'm very excited.
Of course, it'd help if I could get that sheet back in front of me here.
Right there.
On the show today, as always, we're going to have Zach Green from Car King. He's going to join us on the Car King hotline, tell us what's hot on the lot. Anna Claire Thomas, Louisiana Tech Baseball SID. We're going to talk some Tech baseball. I know we talked with Sean Isabella last week. We're going to talk with Anna Claire on the new coach, Lane Burrows, and all things Tech baseball. We're going to have a special guest, Eddie Canales. Eddie is the founder and CEO of Gridiron Heroes. And, yeah. DJ, you're going to be going to a coach's clinic down in Baton Rouge this month, or in July, actually.
Yeah, next month, about 2 weeks.
And you're going to get to meet him and see some great stuff there.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, you see, a great thing about the relationship, me and Mr. Eddie, actually, we go back probably over by 12 years.
Okay.
And he's doing a lot of great things, and he's going to talk to us a little bit about that. But real excited about the coaching clinic that they're going to be hosting down in Baton Rouge in about 2 weeks.
We're going to have our What's Up segment this week. We weren't able to catch up with him last week. He had something come up, but we're going to have Alan Ricard on. Alan, former player from Amite, Louisiana, played down south in high school, played at NLU, played in the NFL for 8 to 10 years, I believe, and is now running backs coach at ULM. He's our What's Up segment today. We're also going to have Louisiana Sports Hall of Fame Director Doug Ireland on the program. I've known Doug for a long time. He is the SID at Northwestern State University and is in charge of the Louisiana Sports Hall of Fame. I've said several times on this program that if you ever get a chance, you need to head to Natchitoches to go to the Hall of Fame. It's amazing what you'll see there. The guys who are in the Louisiana Sports Hall of Fame are either from Louisiana, they played in Louisiana, mm-hmm. and or they have some kind of ties. Maybe they were just born here. Bill Russell, for example, born in Louisiana. But anyway, we're going to have Doug Ireland on. Big day in Natchitoches for the induction ceremonies. We'll talk more about that with him, and we'll cover who's going into the Hall of Fame in tonight's ceremony. And we'll round out the program with Josh Tolleson once again. This week we'll be talking American League Baseball. So big program for you today. We've got a lot of stuff coming up. Glad you joined us. But I want to start out, DJ, with somebody who's back in the news. Probably never goes away. First off, I want to say how unhappy I am for you. Not for you, but with you.
Okay.
Not happy. You were able to go to the West Monroe, West Ouachita Chamber of Commerce Expo.
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
that
was yesterday from 10 to 2. Man, great setup. I think the chamber did a good job setting everything up, and there was a lot of our local businesses there.
Yes, a lot.
Real good networking, real good fellowship. It was great.
One of us had to work, you know, for a living, and and wasn't able to attend. And somehow, I need to talk to Alana about this.
Yeah.
But somehow, you walked away with a door prize, and that door prize included what you're waving in my face today, an ESPN hat and ESPN T-shirt.
ESPN hat, T-shirt. I had it all came in a duffel bag. Did I mention that was in
a big, you mentioned a few things.
Okay.
So.
Oh yeah.
You know, but you know, it's not like you could just tell me about it. You had to wear them the show today.
Both of them.
Both of them. Yes. I accidentally gave you that Two Dudes Catering cup, so I'm going to need that back you have the other stuff.
Well, let me finish my water out here.
Yeah. Okay. I also want to announce, I heard that. John Tabor, just so you'll know, in honor of ESPN the magazine, on July 6th, well, I don't even know if that's the right, I mean, I know it's the right date. I don't know if we have a show that day. What day of the week is July 6th on?
That's the 9th. It's going to be that week. The 4th is a Monday, so the 6th is a Wednesday. And
okay.
You have that weekend to be like the 7th, 8th night.
Let me look real quick here if I can figure out this technology, how this calendar thing works. Because I have a big announcement. July 6th is a Wednesday, so July the 9th, okay? July the 9th, in honor of ESPN the magazine's newsstand release. It'll hit online July the 6th, and it'll be released that Saturday on the newsstands. It'll hit the newsstands that Saturday. ESPN the magazine's... Just left me. What's the issue with all the naked people?
You talking about the Sports Illustrated?
No, the ESPN
the
magazine.
Oh, the naked people, like the sport, the athletes.
The athletes.
Yeah, they have Dwayne Wade.
The ESPN body issue.
The body.
In honor of that, I will be doing the show naked that day.
Okay. Let me go ahead. Tabor, let me put a request to be off. I'll fax it over to you, because if I walk in and you in here naked, it's going to be a very serious situation.
I might have to do the show from home that day, but in honor of the body issue, I will do the show naked. So I just wanted to let everyone be aware of that. I don't even know where to go from there. Johnny Manziel, that's where I was headed.
Yeah, in the news.
In the news again. But this time, put there by his father. Okay. Johnny Manziel's dad said, "My son is a druggie, has been a druggie. He needs help. He can't stop. Needs to go to jail. Probably the best place for him." And as you and I were talking earlier, he didn't say rehab.
No.
He said jail. Said
straight to jail.
Well, let's talk about who's partially responsible for Johnny Manziel's behavior. That would be his entitling parents, who, you know, Johnny had the nickname Johnny Football, but a lot of people it was Johnny Effin Football.
They put an extra F in there.
Yeah. So his parents considered, as most great parents would, considered getting license plates that said Johnny FF Mom and Johnny JFF Mom and JFF Dad. So they were going to promote that other F.
Yeah.
So great parents, and it's no wonder that he's messed up as he is. He's an athlete. He's a good athlete.
Yes.
But he has nothing between his ears.
Very significant problems. I can remember reading where he spent, like $1,000 at one time on drug paraphernalia. Like, literally hours, you know, after he was involved in, you know, you're in a hit-and-run accident. Then, you know what, let me go buy some more drug paraphernalia.
Yeah, I need to forget about that accident.
Yeah, so, I mean, I think they call it, what's the word they call it?
Stupid?
Affluenza.
Affluenza. Yeah. I'm not real big on new words, you know, but you can go probably look that one up in the Urban Dictionary. But affluenza, I'm very much in favor of.
Yeah, I think the last time I had something close to that, I had to go get a shot for it.
Yeah. Tabor, I'm sure you're aware of this. I don't know the whole story. I saw the headline. Diego Maradona, great former soccer player, has told Argentina win or else in the Copa Cup. Have you seen that story?
I have, but or else what?
Well, I don't know, but usually when somebody says win or else or do this or else, there's usually means the consequences aren't going to be very good. So
drastic consequences.
We're going to take a second right now, jump to the Car King hotline and visit with Car King's own Zach Green. Zach, welcome to the program today.
Hey guys, how's it going?
It's going great.
Very well.
Another beautiful day to go car shopping. So why don't you tell us what's hot on the lot?
Man, it is an awesome day to be car shopping. Today we have a 2015 Toyota Camry with 6,000 miles, still under full factory warranty. It's an LE with a power seat. It has also another 2015 Toyota Camry with 22,000 miles, and one of those is $16,995 and the other is $17,995. Also, we have a 2011 Nissan Versa. 5-speed, it's only got 30,000 miles, and I can sell that car for $7,500, and that is still under factory warranty. And that's what's hot on the lot.
All right. tell us where you're located and how to find you, and then we'll talk about what you're doing after you get off.
All right. We are at 12 Louisville Avenue, or you can give us a holler at 318-330-9285. Check us out on our website, carkingmonroe.com. That's carkingmonroe.com.
So you got the grill firing up after work? What you got planned?
Absolutely. I'm already heading to the house to do a little grilling with the wife and family. And just going to enjoy the day, man. That's it.
All right. Well, I appreciate you being on the program, and we will talk to you next week. Zach Green, Car King in Monroe.
All right, Zach.
All right. So Ben Simmons was the overall number one pick in the NBA draft. Does he have the ability? Absolutely. He's got the ability. Did he use his ability? You're a coach. What's your thought on Ben Simmons throughout the year at LSU?
It's a word that a lot of people have heard, but they really don't understand the true meaning of it, and that's consistency. Don't know if he was as consistent as he needed to be at LSU. Now, like you say, you know, great. I mean, I played with a lot of players who knew how to turn it on when they needed to turn it on, but as you move up in the different layers or levels, I mean, what you can do in high school, you can't do the same thing in college. I don't care how much talent you got. And when you get to college, you may get by with maybe not doing all the reps in the weight room, maybe slacking a little bit at practice. But when you get to the NFL or the NBA or any professional level of sporting, you got to turn it up. I mean, consistency is going to be what's going to determine if he can hold what he has, why he got it.
Right. And I'm going to tell you what, with all the talent, yes, and people say, well, look at him. He averaged a double-double. Well, yeah, because there were some games where he had great games, and someone with his ability should have been able to take over games. There were games they lost they had no business losing. Mm. Okay, games they won that they probably had no business winning, but he showed up. And in my opinion, if you're worthy of the number one pick, you got to do something. I'm glad that the Pelicans didn't have the number one pick because I don't believe in wasting the talent God gave you. I mean, those are God-given abilities that he has.
He's very – I mean, you can tell that it's natural.
Yes, and so, you know, I guess the Sixers think that they can take him and, you know, and he'll turn it up all the time, turn it on all the time in the NBA, but I'm not so sure of that. But we will see. Pelicans draft, they take Buddy Hield. I like him. He says he's going to be a high-character guy. We definitely need that. We know he can shoot. There are questions about his defense, but – he can't be as bad as James Harden. So anything better than James Harden, you know,
is a plus.
Is a plus. So, you know, heck with it. Let's see if he can get in there and shoot the lights out, clear some space for AD, and we'll see. Last thing I want to mention before we go to our first break is going to be Vladimir Guerrero Jr. Vlad was always one of my favorite baseball players, you know. Just liked him. He got out there and he hustled and, you know, his swing was unorthodox because he could hit a home run, you know, off the ground.
Or roll it on the ground. He'll figure out a way to.
Absolutely. He swung at anything, never saw a pitch he didn't like. He'd hit it above his head. He'd hit it out of the park, you know, like I said, anywhere. And his son hits his first professional home run last night with, you know, Vlad Jr. hits his first pro home run with dad in the stand. So I know that was a big moment for him. There have been a few of those, you know, remember when Griffey and his dad hit back-to-back home runs for the Mariners. That was always good. And, you know, Griffey's the third, Trey.
Yeah.
He was drafted in the 24th round, hasn't played baseball since he was 12.
Right. That's just because, I mean, you can.
Well, because he's an athlete.
DNA.
Absolutely. Look him and DNA. Torey Hunter's son both drafted in the, I think, 24th round.
DNA.
But let's take our first break. We are brought to you. We are presented by DBAT of Monroe. Welcome back to the program, Talking Sports here on ESPN 97.7 FM. Byron Avery, DJ Davis, B&D, your host for the program. We go now to someone that already brightens up the room, Anna Claire Thomas with Louisiana Tech Baseball, the Tech Baseball SID for the Bulldogs. Anna Claire, welcome to the program.
Thank you guys for having me. How are y'all doing?
All righty.
Doing great, doing great. Want to talk a little Tech baseball. So you were able to enjoy a great ride this year with the Bulldog baseball. Greg Goff, the Bulldogs had a tremendous season. You know, we've talked about it here multiple times on the program. 40-plus wins, first regional in 29 years, two wins in the regional, multiple wins, like 9 wins against ranked teams. It was just a great year. First of all, how fun was the ride this year?
It was incredible. You know, it was something that I really don't think I've processed everything yet. But while it was going on, it was all happening so fast, and we went on that run, and it was just really, really just contagious. We showed that at the end there, and I think every day I look up a little something different, and, you know, wrapping up the season and putting going through all the stats and the records, and it's really, it was a magical season, and, you know, we were sad to see it come to an end, but the fact that we made it as far as we did and, you know, winning those games and 42 wins, it was just kind of unprecedented. I don't think anybody expected it. It was a fun ride.
Yeah, and especially coming off, what, 25 wins last year?
Yeah, 25 and 27 last year and 42 and 20 this year. So that's not a bad turnaround.
Oh, yeah,
that's a big turnaround. And, of course, we know at a school of that level what the consequences are, the consequences, benefits, however you want to look at it. Before we get to that, the players. I know they had a special relationship with Greg Goff. Tell me a little bit about that and how he kind of inspired them.
Absolutely. Well, you know, Coach Goff came in and, you know, his first goal was we're going to turn this thing around and make this team into what it used to be back in the 80s and early 90s. And he brought in a lot of JUCO players to do that automatically and really quickly. And I think they all bought in, and that's why everyone was so close. A bunch of people came to play here from a lot of different places, and they all just kind of gelled immediately, and they played as one, and they went on that wild ride together. So it was a special relationship between all the players with each other and with Coach Goff and that coaching staff. So it was tough. You know, that last game, there were a lot of tears, a lot of emotional guys, just because they didn't want it to see it end. It was a special, special group of guys.
Absolutely, and I know that everyone associated with Bulldog Nation, so to speak, was proud of them. I know there were a lot of former players coming back. You know, the Blue Nation tag arrived, rose up. And then, as I mentioned earlier, the spoils of war kind of, when you have a season like that at a program, a school the size of Tech, unfortunately, these things happen. Coach Goff is now at Alabama. What was your first notice of player reactions to that?
Well, you know, obviously I think it was a Thursday last week that the rumors started kind of swirling. And really at this point in June, I kind of thought we were in the clear. I thought we were going to get to keep him another year, but the rumors started swirling and, you know, everyone's asking questions and worried. And really, Friday, once it became official, it was just, you know, I was really happy for Coach Goff. I think that's his dream job, and he's happy to be there, and he loved his time in Ruston. I have had a couple conversations with him since, and I think he's forever going to be indebted to this team, and he loved that group of guys, and he loved working here. But it's kind of hard to turn down your dream job at Alabama. So I'm really happy for him. I'm proud of him. He's going to do a great job there, turning that program around and getting them back to where they want to go. But, you know, it was unfortunate that we lost him. I thought we were going to have another year. And we're certainly going to miss him. But we're going to move forward and see if we can go win 40 more games next year.
I know that a lot of players had their own emotions, their own opinions about who the next hire should be. I know there was a lot of love for the current pitching coach, whose name escapes me.
Christian Ostrander.
Ostrander. Yeah, that's what it was there, but I just couldn't spit it out. I know that Hall, the shortstop, one of the reports was that because of the decision by Coach Goff, he went ahead and signed, even though he was undrafted. So when the announcement was made, so I got two questions here. When the announcement was made about Lane Burrows becoming the new head coach, what did you first hear? And then after his press conference, which I know was attended by players, people have raved about how Burrows did at the press conference. You know, she'd be a motivational speaker. So what were the first rumblings about Lane Burrows as the hire, and then has anything changed since the press conference?
You know, really, when it first kind of came out that we were going to get Lane, or that there were even talks about Lane coming to be the head coach here, I heard nothing but positive things. And I think it's, you know, with him coaching so close in the area at Northwestern State, I think a lot of the guys knew his reputation and that he was a good coach and he's done some big things. And, you know, we've competed against those guys the last few years, and they're always very competitive, and they're really good close games. We've seen his style of coaching, and it was actually very similar to Coach Goff. So I don't think there was a lot of hesitation on the part of players, fans, staff, and I think he kind of solidified his coaching style and how it's going to how he's going to run things at his press conference when he was so passionate. And you know, he comes out saying, we're going to host the regional, we're going to host the super regional, we're not taking steps back, we're going to build on the foundation that Coach Goff left. And he was very, very passionate and straightforward. And I think the guys, the players, and the fans and administration, everyone really, they love that side of him. They love seeing him get so fired up about Tech baseball. Just because, I mean, Coach Goff, he kind of brought baseball to the forefront of Tech athletics this past year, and I think Coach Burrows is going to want to keep it there, and he's going to do a good job.
And that's great to hear. You know, again, it was awesome to see the reaction to Tech's run, Tech's success in baseball. Like I said, the Blue Nation term popped up, and people ran with it, and that's a good thing. You know, you don't want to see things like that die. You got to capitalize on the momentum, and I think Tommy McClellan did that. With the hire of Lane Burrows, I know that he was able to talk to Christian Ostrander and retain him. So I know that's going to make a lot of the players happy. So now you've got Ostrander, who made a huge impact on the team along with Coach Burrows. So looks like nothing but thumbs up and positives going forward. Now I did read where when Coach Goff first accepted or first was offered the job at Alabama, Tech matched the $300,000 a year offer. That's what I read. Any truth to that you know?
Well, you know, I know there were some talks back and forth between Tommy and Coach Goff on what it would take to stay here. And, you know, I don't know if the figures that came out or were reported were exact, but I know that there were some counter offers. And at certain points, you know, Coach Goff was going back and forth about whether he wanted to stay or go. And then I think Alabama kind of upped the ante a little bit, and they kind of made it a no-brainer to go there for him. But, you know, it was a really tough decision for him. Like I said, I've had a couple conversations with him since, and he's got nothing but love for Ruston, Louisiana, and his baseball program. And he said he's going to follow along as probably closer than anyone. You know, these are his guys he brought in. So next year he's going to be our number one fan.
Now, Anna Claire?
Yes.
Hey, the press conference that was held last week, Coach Burrows hosted or he held, were you able to make that press conference?
Yes, I was. I was there.
Okay, good. Because for those of us who didn't get a chance to make it, was it anything that he mentioned at the press conference that stood out to you about talking points, or what does he see himself doing maybe the first couple weeks he gets in as the head coach?
You know, right now he's just getting settled. But, you know, in his press conference, he talked a lot. Like I said, he put the words out there about we want to host a regional. We don't want to just get there. We want to host, and we want to host a super regional. And I think he kind of opened fans' eyes to how close this year's team actually was to getting to Omaha in the College World Series. He said, you know, we were four wins away from making it to Omaha. You win that game against Mississippi State and another one, and then two more the next weekend, and you're in Omaha. So I think that was important for fans to realize how close we were and how good this team was this year. But he also talked a lot about character and the players that we have coming back and the type of players he's going to recruit. And it reminded me a lot of what the coaching staff last year did and what they looked for. So that was really encouraging.
But, right, good.
You know, I've been to quite a few Tech baseball games in my time. The improvements that have continued to be made on the facility are great. I'm going to tell you, the right field, you know, when it was the right field rowdies back in the 80s, you know, there was just people hanging out in lawn chairs, banging on the fence and all that kind of stuff. But if we're to make a regional, or if we're to host a regional, I should say, something's going to have to be done about parking, because the parking lot for baseball is a place where no one should park. You know, I've had a car hit there. I've had a car hit over at the Lady Texas softball field. So it's, you know, that's going to be an issue. But I'm guessing that if Tech gets to the point where they're hosting a regional, the parking issue will be figured out. So $300,000, this is a story, $300,000 was offered to Greg Goff. Tech matched it. That's a plus. Tech was willing to go out, invest in baseball at that point. $300,000 for the baseball coach at Louisiana Tech is a ton of money. So that speaks well of the athletic department, that they realized what they had, realized what they needed to keep, and they made the effort. Then Alabama goes to $450,000. And you know, again, that's you say, well, that's only another $150,000, but that's a lot of money in that budget. We're already looking at stories. You know, Tech's got the smallest Conference USA budget. They're starting to make cost of attendance payments, losing money from the Conference USA football TV money, TV package deal. And then you add that money with a dream job. And you, like you said, Greg Goff had no choice but to take that job. It's already his dream job, and now it's, you know, basically $500,000 a year. You can't help yourself.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, it's just incredible. And, you know, the resources that Alabama's got, it's hard for teams to match that. It doesn't matter who you are. Alabama's one of the best schools in the country, best athletic departments in the country, and I think they would have done anything to get him there, and he's happy to be there. He said he's getting used to saying Roll Tide a lot. But he's happy to be there, and he's got nothing but good memories of his time in Ruston, and he's going to do his best to go get that team to Omaha. That's the number one goal in Alabama. So I think he's going to do a good job.
And we wish him all the best. He did great things for Louisiana Tech. Now Lane Burrows is here, and we got to move on. And I think that there are many positives. What can you tell us about the deal that Lane Burrows signed? Do you have any financial
information? Well, I can't talk specifics right now. You know, the contract still has to go through the Board of Regents in the state of Louisiana to be approved, so I can't talk exact specifics. But, you know, Coach Burrows, he came here and he talked about timing and how the timing 2 years ago, he was interviewed for the job when Greg Goff got it, and it wasn't right for him. He had it wasn't right for his family. His father had just passed away at the time, and he was doing good things at Northwestern State. But, you know, 2 years later, Greg Goff goes to Alabama, and the job's open again. And he said he just felt like it was right. It was the right place to be, and he could do some good things here. So we're happy to have him. Like I said, I can't talk too many specifics about the contract, but we're hoping to keep him for a long time.
Absolutely. I can tell you this, in any business, and DJ, you can concur with me on this, if I'm coming in as the new CEO, and I know you just offered the last guy $300,000, you know, you may not have to give me $300,000 because he already proved what he could do at your facility.
Yeah, but I want to come $209,000.
Well, I'm going to get a nice, sizable raise from where I am. How about that? So we know he's probably taken care of financially, and in living in Ruston doesn't take a ton, so he can do really well. The biggest part of all this, you know, we're talking the 450 for Greg, whatever, for Lane Burrows, and that's not really the issue because that's them. The issue here is it looks like Tech got the right coach, capitalized on the momentum, and big things are still ahead.
Absolutely. And we have a great facility that he's taking over, too. I mean, with the turf field and what Coach Goff and his coaching staff did with that field, it's just it's nothing short of amazing. And Coach Burrows, he just raved about that when he got here the other day. And you see, he looks out on it every day and kind of pinches himself. So it's kind of, I think, exactly what you said. We have the right guy at the right time, and he's going to do big things. He's taken over a team that won 42 games last year, and we've got a ton of guys returning. We got some guys drafted away, but other than that, we've got pretty much, I think, six or seven starters returning in the field. So it's going to be a big year, I think, for Tech baseball.
Absolutely. Well, Anna Claire, really appreciate you joining us this afternoon. I started to say this morning again. This afternoon, great insight on Tech baseball, and look forward to talking to you again down the road. How can people
Absolutely.
Keep up with you and what you tweet out and how your social media status?
Well, you know, I tweet out, my Twitter is at @AC_Thomas. Most of the time I'm actually tweeting out from La Tech Baseball. It's at La Tech BSC. I spend more time there than my own Twitter, but either one of those, you can keep up with Tech baseball.
All right. Anna Claire, thanks again. Enjoy the rest of your weekend.
Thank you guys for having me.
All right. No problem. We'll take another break. Byron Avery, DJ Davis, with you talking sports.
ESPN 97.7.
Welcome back to the program, Talking Sports here on ESPN 97.7. I want to say thanks again to Anna Claire Thomas from the Tech Sports Information Office, talking Tech baseball. Lane Burrows, the new coach, big things expected, big things on the horizon for Tech baseball.
Big things
popping, absolutely. Next week we hope to talk to someone from ULM. We're trying to get in touch with them on their 22 for 22.
I had a lot of guys, and I felt real good seeing some of the guys that played on the team that I was on. Foley, I seen safety, Brian. We had Brian Taylor. We just called him BT.
Mm-hmm.
Local boy, Shane Pitter, was on that list on the offensive side. So seeing some of those guys come through on that 22 for 22, knowing that these are guys that I was in the locker room with, felt real good to see their names and faces get put up on that list.
Our next guest coming up in a few minutes is going to be Eddie Canales with Gridiron Heroes. Tell us a little bit before we get on the phone with him, a little bit about the clinic that you're going to attend in Baton Rouge.
Yes, it's going to be it's entitled the Heads Up Coaching Clinic. And it's basically going to be one of the clinics that's doing a lot to get coaches to start focusing more on proper form and tackle. You know, we've had, even in Louisiana over the past couple of years, we've had a lot of kids injured with improper tackling, head down tackling, top of the crown tackling. And, you know, we lost a player out in Franklin Parish this past year, which, you know, was very heart-wrenching. And so the clinic is basically going to be held to get coaches focusing more on the proper way. So there's going to be a lot of former NFL players there. There's going to be some medical experts and just talking about the things that we all need to know about when it comes to protecting our kids.
Obviously, it's a big issue, you know, starting more into the limelight with the NFL and players, you know, with CTE and all of that. Concussion syndrome, all of this different type of stuff, but you can't fix it at the NFL level. Hard to fix it at the college level or the high school level. You got to start it when players begin. Everything you do, you got to fix at the beginning.
Yes, I mean in anything.
Yes. So going to the Pee Wee leagues and the youth leagues is where to fix this, and teaching you know, actually proper tackling techniques. You know, it's not something new, but it's just going back, saying, hey, you know, you can't take out what you can't see.
Right.
So, and you can't see with your head down. So head up, eyes on the chest or whatever. Wrap them up, because we don't see wrap up tackling anymore.
Oh,
you know,
no,
people
no.
try to knock people off their feet, and if they don't go off their feet, guess what? They keep running.
Yeah. And it's just got to a point where it's time to really start focusing on what can we do to, like I say, protect. You know, not saying, you know, because there's no way, because I love football. I mean, you can ask my wife. She wonders if I'm even sometimes having, like, you know, dreams of still going back out there and play. But I know that, you know, we don't want to say, oh, well, nobody needs to play football, but we really need to look at how can we continue to do what we got to do to protect and make sure we're doing the right techniques and right form, because you only going to – everybody's going to can't play football forever.
Right.
Yeah, you know, and so at some point you got to become, I guess we want to say, a regular person, I guess you want to say that.
Yeah, get so, back into society.
So you can't play it forever, so you got to be able to function after you're done playing football.
And I'm going to tell you this again. I've got a very wide soapbox. It's full of many issues.
Right.
But the guys that join in these lawsuits, I'm against that. You know, sign me up. You know, I may not be able to walk when I get done, but I'm going to make generational money take care of my family forever.
Yes.
And if I don't, that's on me.
Right.
If I don't have that money for generations, that's on me. But they're going to make generational money.
Oh, yes, yes.
Sign me up. Everybody knows what they get. The person that signed an NFL contract without knowing that it's what we talked about yesterday, a collision sport.
Yes, yes.
Compared to a contact sport. That's just a lie.
No, it's definitely a collision.
I mean, you know what you're getting into. If you've played it at that length where you're signing a pro contract, you know what you're getting into. So I don't come begging when you run out of money and you say you're hurt. I mean, again, I believe you're hurt.
Yes.
You know, look at Earl Campbell. The man can barely stand.
Man, he don't even have none of his real joints even work anymore. I think knees been replaced, ankles been replaced. And that's back in the day when it was like no true regulations on the sport. You know,
yeah.
Was,
well, and again, you know, we're talking about heads up football. We're talking about not being able, to tackle correctly and all that. But the NFL is taking away the need to tackle almost. You can't touch the quarterback. You can't touch a receiver going across the middle. You know, he doesn't have to worry about getting hit.
No.
Guys like Michael Irvin, you know, I'm not a huge fan of personally, but the man would go across the middle, catch a ball and hang on to it when he got slobber knocked.
Oh yeah,
you can't. He wouldn't have to worry about today. Oh. There's no telling how many yards.
Yeah,
he had.
His what they call yak yards after the catch will probably be through the roof because of not being able to get hit like you used to.
Yep. But we're gonna take a quick break. When we come back, we hope to have Eddie Canales. You're listening to Talking Sports,
ESPN 97.7.
Welcome back to the program, Talking Sports on ESPN 97.7 FM. B&D, Byron Avery and DJ Davis, your hosts.
Yes, sir.
We go now to our next guest, the CEO and founder of Gridiron Heroes. Gridiron Heroes Spinal Cord Injury Foundation. I want to welcome to the program Mr. Eddie Canales.
Thank you, Byron. Appreciate it.
All right. Why don't you start off, just tell us a little bit about Gridiron Heroes and how it got started.
Well, Gridiron Heroes started after my son broke his neck playing football. He went through kind of ups and downs that first year. All we could offer him at the time, we'd almost lost him twice in ICU, and once when he came home, all we could tell him was that, you know, he was still here for a reason, and if the Lord had wanted him by his side, he had three chances to take him. 1 year to the actual anniversary date of his injury, I took him to a state championship game here in Texas, and like I said, he was going through some ups and downs. And we, 45 minutes into the state championship game, we ended up witnessing another young man suffer a spinal injury. as that young man was being put on the cart, Chris turned to him and said, "Dad, we've got to go help him. I know what he's going to go through. You know what the family's going to go through." And that was the inspiration behind starting Gridiron Heroes, to be there for those families, for that athlete when something like this happens. No one is ever prepared for something like this. It, you know, it's a catastrophic, life-changing injury. You know, the downfall sometimes is the fact that some of these kids come from single homes sometimes, and they need help, not only when they initially get hurt, but long-term. And that's one of the things that we're trying to change, is that to make sure that these kids don't fall in between the cracks, and that that they do get the help that they need, the equipment that they need. And so, you know, unfortunately, we've been very busy. We started in 2003 with our organization. The first 3 years in Texas, we actually had three kids go down each year. And so, you know, along with trying to be there for those families and making sure they have the equipment that they need, you know, we raise money now to try to make sure that they have like wheelchair accessible vehicles, ramps into their homes, pressure reducing mattresses, even wheelchairs sometimes. You know, it's just one of those things. No one is ever prepared for that. So we're able to guide that family and that community on how best to help that young man when something like this happens.
Well, you know, Mr. Eddie, this is Coach DJ, and you know, I'm super excited just to have you on, and you know, we go back, I mean, almost till the initial, I mean, 2003, 2004. So right. I'm really excited to be able to have you guys on today, and especially with what you have coming up here in a couple of weeks, and I want to get a chance to tell us a little bit about how you get to the point where we're going to have the Heads Up Coaching Clinic. And how did that start, and give us some details on it.
Well, a lot of people don't know that Gridiron Heroes, you know, first of all, you know, it's never been about deterring anyone from playing football. We still love the game of football. All of our kids still love the game of football.
Yes, sir.
We've done our part on the prevention side. You know, I like to prevent having to add to our family of Gridiron Heroes. And what we want to do is people to understand that Gridiron Heroes was involved initially with the Heads Up program that the NFL and USA Football started. Our documentary, which you can, you know, download and watch on our website, our documentary was what was shown to the NFL by Peter Berg, who did Friday Night Lights. He worked on our documentary. Right. And so when we were able to introduce the coach that created the Heads Up tactic program, the initial Heads Up program that the USA Football and NFL adopted, the reason for that was that it was the only evidence-based program that teaches how to keep your head up, and it was researched individually. It was the separate research by the LA84 Foundation out of California. What it indicated, it reduced the helmet first impact by at least 43%. That's 100% of the crown taken out of the tackle, so thus making the game a little safer for our kids, and that's what this is about. It's making it safer, making sure the kids are having fun, but also, in a sense, you know, preserving the game of football. You know, football is under attack right now. I get a lot of hate mail because we still support the game of football. But, you know, along with trying to make the game safer for our kids, we still have to do a better job to help these kids when something like this does happen. You know, I get the calls when a single mom calls me, or their son's been isolated in a room for 6 months, the wheelchair goes down, they have no money to fix it. You know, where do they go? This young man graduated from high school. We have one young man that was in another state that had been injured 10 years prior. And, you know, human nature, people go on with their lives. But these families are still having to deal with the day-to-day struggles of a spinal injury. And so what does a, you know, mom do when they need a new wheelchair? Who do they call? And we're now getting those calls. A real sad story was a young man that was injured 10 years ago. Still on a ventilator, and most of our kids are quadriplegics. A storm had come through and knocked out the electricity, and because people forgot about him, he didn't have a $500 backup generator, he passed away. Oh, our man. Deal is, as big as football is in this country, that should never happen.
Never.
And so, you know, what we want to do is, you know, take care of those kids, but at the same time, make the game a little bit safer. Our Heads Up program has gotten a lot of attention. We are starting to, like I said, our documentary has won a lot of awards. You know, it is the only evidence-based program out there for keeping your head out of the tackle. Now, part of our problem that sometimes that we face is that kids that are playing from 4 to 7 years old, when they put a helmet on, sometimes can't keep their head up. So what we want to do is make sure that, first of all, they can keep their head up. All of the research and everything is based on someone keeping their head up. Our deal with, USA Football, NFL, was that if they can't keep their head up, then we suggested that they don't play tackle football. Let them play flag football and learn the game, you know. But that has been always our approach, and how we differ a little bit from the USA Football and NFL, because they still indicate letting them play tackle football even though they can't keep their head up. Right. Our deal is make the game safer for our kids. Let's make sure that we make it safe. And we have a team of former professional athletes, coaches that we have that are volunteer coaches that will be coming into Baton Rouge for a camp. And we have also part of our team, we have Dr. Evan Ratner, who is a concussion specialist. He coaches coming in can also get certified on their concussion protocol. We're able to do that for our coaches as well. Dr. Ratner has joined our team and has his team as well, of doctors that come in and are able to help us, with the concussion protocol, which is right now so prevalent in discussions, with football right now. So what we want to do is make sure we also, talk about the concussions, proper tackling techniques, spinal injuries, and brain injuries,
Yeah, I'll be down, I'll be down, and I have a few coaches that'll be driving down as well. Awesome. And you mentioned that you've had some former coaches that are going to be doing some assisting and sort of helping out. You have a list, name a couple of those, or give the audience an idea of who will be down there for.
Randy Fuller is part of our team, and he has he played with Pittsburgh, and he's got a few of his buddies that are coming down, and they'll be working on our camp. Our coach, our organizer, basically, is Cersei Thompson, and Randy's wife, Gussie Fuller, are hosting the event for us and raising money for Gridiron Heroes as well.
Randy Fuller, I remember him having one of those big breakup pass plays when he was in the NFL, played a few years over at Pittsburgh. And so, and with the heads up coaching clinic, I think that it's going to be great to be able to come down. And I think from what I understand as well, coaches can get a chance not only to learn and get a hands-on training on the heads-up technique, but they're also able to receive some credits, like CEU credits.
Exactly.
There's a lot of benefits from getting a chance to for those who can get down to the clinic. Next week, and those, what are those dates again, Mr. Eddie?
There's going to be a special, a celebrity meet and greet with some of our former players on Thursday, July the 7th. And then on Friday, July the 8th, we start our clinics, our camps, July 8th at 8:30 in the morning. And then on Saturday, July 9th, 8:30 in the morning also, we'll be doing our camps there in Baton Rouge. This is actually being put on by the Parks and Recreation, also in support of what we're doing. The Louisiana Trainers Association has come on board to actually support what we're doing and how we're teaching proper tackling techniques. We've gotten a lot of support from trainers throughout the country because they have to deal with these type of injuries, and so they're on board with things like this that we're doing to make the game safer for our kids.
And that's go
to our website, gridironheroes.org, to see, get some more information, and go to Facebook. There's some information on Facebook as well, Gridiron Heroes Spinal Cord Injury Foundation, or just Gridiron Heroes, and, get some of the information off of Facebook as well. So, we're looking for a good group. I know the Parks and Recreation people there in Baton Rouge has quite a few kids lined up and coaches lined up to participate, and so we're looking forward to come out there and make a difference.
I know, looking at your website, that Nick Saban and Gary Patterson are a couple of the coaches that work with you guys. Any coaches specifically that you can tell us will be there in Baton Rouge in July?
No, not that I know of. I mean, we've reached out to Les Miles and you know, some of those coaches. We've had a few coaches from Louisiana that have stepped up also. Some have moved on from Louisiana now, but, you know, we've had some support there from Louisiana. But, you know, part of our deal also that's kind of confusing coaches right now is the big push for what they call hog-style tackling. And, you know, this is something that we're having to address right now because we don't feel that that's a safe program for our youth organizations. And, you know, just because the head is, yes, down in a way, but, you know, what we see is that these kids are still putting their head in an awkward position sometimes. And what we want to do, a lot of people don't get the information, coaches don't get the information, but because hog style tackling is becoming very popular, we want people to understand there's no scientific evidence that indicates any safer than what we've been teaching all along for hog style tackling or rugby style tackling. And the other thing is that, you know, it didn't help that Coach Carroll, you know, is the one that implemented this program because it was safer for his kids or for his guys that were professional athletes and Olympic and then the collegiate athletes when he was coaching. And that's who he started with, and that's great. But didn't help that he won a Super Bowl and he has the number one defense in the NFL. Coaches, like the kids, sometimes want to emulate what they see on the NFL on Sunday. But where's the documentation that says it's safer for kids? This is the first year. Last year was the first year in 13 years where we've had a brain injury, a spinal injury, and a death from Seattle, Washington, where they teach us style of tackling. We also had a young man out of Riverside, California, that had a lot of attention. Now, that young man had suffered a concussion 2 weeks prior. And they threw all the protocols, was cleared to play, had the best equipment, best helmet, came up, made the tackle, perfect hawk-style tackling. He broke down, eyes through the thighs, you know, cheek to cheek, and then he rolled. But when he rolled, he hit his head on the ground. And when he hit his head on the ground, he got up, staggered, went to the sideline, and went into a coma. They had to, you know, cut off the skull to release the pressure on his brain. That started making me think about whether hog style tackling is safe for our younger kids. If we understand, you know, that the brains of a young man from 4 to 16 years of age, the brains are not developed to begin with. And the neck muscles are not developed either. So why would we want to teach a style that could be detrimental to our young kids when you make that role that they are very susceptible to because they have the no neck muscles to actually prevent them from hitting the head on the ground? Why would we want to teach that method to our younger kids? I think it's perfect for a collegiate athlete or a professional athlete. That's fine. The advanced player, hog-style tackling is fine for them. But for our youth, somewhere down the line, we forgot why we initiated the heads-up program, which was to make the game safer for our youth, our younger kids. And so it's been coming very confusing for coaches to adapt, you know, which style to adapt now as far as teaching a safe method. Again, I think it's great for the advanced player, but not necessarily for our youth and our younger players, you know.
Well, just to make sure everyone understands, when you say hawk-style tackling, we're talking about diving, you know, hitting them lower in the legs and rolling, wrapping up and rolling, but the head
right.
is
it's rugby
down.
Style tackling is where it comes from. And, you know, again, when you go through, your head is down, but to the side. If we understand, too, that the brain, if you've ever seen a good aggressive rugby player, you know, their ears are usually cauliflowered. So what does that tell you it might be doing to their brain? The other thing is there's a difference in the way you approach it when a group is in rugby, when they're in a scrum, someone breaks out. Well, everybody's moving in the same direction. They're all moving in the same direction. In football, you don't have that. You've got defensive backs coming from all kinds of directions. So, you know, I know that what they do with putting their head in front and going across the bow is part of their technique. You know, they want to do it that way. But I don't know if y'all remember there in Tulsa where the young man suffered an injury. Well, he came across the bow and he had to hit on from with his teammate. He ended up paralyzed. And so, you know, that's, you know, coming across the bow. And we don't teach that with heads-up tackling. You know, again, there's no scientific evidence that says rugby-style tackling is safer for our kids. And that right now is confusing our coaches because, you know, it didn't help that he fell when that Super Bowl and he's got the best defense. And, you know, that's about X's and O's. That's about, you know, good defense. That's not about making the game safer. We're talking about making the game safer for our kids, you know.
Well, I can tell you this. A lot of us, I think, played rugby when we were kids. We just called it kill the man with the ball. Whoever's got the ball, just tackle, just get him.
Yeah, we used to call it either that or no man's stand or hot potato or
just something like that. But that's that was basically it. So Gridiron Heroes, not what a lot of people would expect when they hear that term.
Right.
You know, they may think of some of the legends of the game, but Gridiron Heroes are those ones that are surviving after these injuries and those that are helping them.
Right. You know, kind of put that in perspective for us is that I always try to tell Chris and I, my son and I, always attend a lot of coaching clinics throughout the state and throughout, you know, the United States. We always hear that programs are built on military principles. But I always try to address that fact. I said, that's great. But usually one that always falls short is never leave a fallen comrade behind. These young men, like I said, they have to deal with the day-to-day struggles of a spinal injury. These families have to, they've suffered quite a bit, not only physically, mentally, and financially. It's one of the most devastating injuries that an individual can ever have. And, you know, there's a lot that goes on with this injury that a lot of people are not aware of. But the football community seems to forget these young men, and that's what we're trying to change. To kind of put it in perspective, I'll leave you with this thought. Everybody remembers, since you're talking to a whole sports fan, you know, all the sports fans, everybody remembers when the Racehorse Barbaro went down. When the Racehorse Barbaro went down, the racehorse community raised millions of dollars for the medical treatment and care of a fine animal. We, as part of the football community, need to value our human injured athletes as much, if not more, than what the racehorsing community valued a horse. And we're a long ways from that. For so many years, from the NFL all the way down, the way this injury has always been handled has been out of sight, out of mind. And that's got to change. We've got to quit burying our head in the sand. It's time to help these young men and these families. There's help now. The NFL, you know, they've been forced to help their older players. But what happens to the young men that graduates from high school after they leave high school that have been injured? There's nothing out there. Gridiron Heroes is the only one out there that we know of that helps these families. And so, you know, but we have to have support from within the football community, and it's not been easy because, again, most people want to just not talk about it. So I appreciate the fact that y'all have me on the air and able to talk about this to help families. We have several Gridiron Heroes from the Louisiana area. You know, one of the young men from Byrd High School out of Shreveport, Louisiana. Of course, y'all met Derek Edwards, who's now running for state representative. Was he's our honorary Gridiron Heroes from Louisiana. So, you know, we've had several families that we've reached out to that are from Louisiana. And so Myron Wright is another one that's out there that's from Louisiana. And so, you know, we want to do to make sure these kids are not forgotten, you know, even beyond high school, because there's so much involved with this injury that a lot of people are not aware of and but they could use help with.
Well, Eddie, tell us how people, you know, give us a website, any other social media sites where we can access information and how people can help.
You can go to gridironheroes.org, or you can go to our Facebook page. You know, we have Gridiron Heroes Spinal Cord Injury Foundation, and you also can go to just Gridiron Heroes on Facebook, and you can see our logo with the helmet, number 9. Number 9 was my son's number when he was playing football. But you can go there. We're on LinkedIn. We're on Twitter as well with Gridiron Heroes. You know, we could use the help, like I said, from within the football community. This is very important to make sure these young men, and that we can react when they need the help. and that's the most important thing, to have the funds to be able to, you know, make sure that they have the equipment that they need. Some schools have catastrophic policies, a lot do not. Some parents have insurance, a lot do not. And so, you know, and even if they do, insurance is, you know, it only goes so far. And, of course, we've had stories on ESPN before where, you know, we've had where they've shown the difference where someone that has a catastrophic policy and getting help as compared to someone that didn't have that policy and what happens and the difference it makes in the lives of these young men. So,
well, and I think it's important for us to point out again, as you've already pointed out, that Gridiron Heroes does not support ending football. Still, no. Very much football fans. We're just trying to make sure that starting with the young people, we understand how to play it a little bit safer.
Right. Yeah. Now that's so important. And part of our deal is that a lot of times we're able to take the guys out on events. You know, we go to, on outings with them. I have a bunch of group in California. You know, we were able to gather them up and go to the Cowboys training camp in California. Had a good time in Oxnard with them. We also had, you know, groups in Dallas area and the Houston area and gone to some of their camps as well. So, you know, part of it is just they still love the game. All the guys still love the game. Yes, any of them, would they still play even though they got hurt? They all say yes, you know. So, yeah, now, Gridiron Heroes has never been about deterring anyone from playing football, but we do want to do our part on the prevention side. And having that heads-up clinic is part of that process.
Yeah, Mr. Eddie, football is one of them sports, you know, as many years that I played, it just builds that camaraderie, and it's nothing like it, so I can understand exactly why those guys would still say yes if I had the opportunity that I would still play. And, you know, as we get ready to wrap up, I can remember personally building relationships with some Gridiron Heroes who are no longer here. You know, we had O'Neal Mitchell and David Edwards, and I can personally attest to the things that you guys are doing as far as support, motivating these guys and just giving them the things and trying to get the funds in place to provide with, you know, vans and ramps and, right. and a lot of the equipment they need. So for all of those who are listening, the camp is coming up in July. You got July the 7th, the 8th, and the 9th. You got the meet and greet on Thursday. You can go to the website gridironheroes.org to find out more about registering for that. You can also go to onlyway.com. That's O-N-L-E-E way, W-A-Y.com. And you have a link that you can, get information and register for the Heads Up Coaching Clinic sponsored by Gridiron Heroes Foundation.
Awesome. Yeah, we need for the football community to step up. You know, we've been quite busy. In Texas, we've had 28 families, with the last three that we added to our family of Gridiron Heroes last year, just in Texas alone. Wow. All across the nation, we've reached out to over 50 families all across the nation. And, you know, and we try to tell coaches when we go to coaching, but we hope and pray that no trainer, coach, superintendent, AD has to ever call us. But we are there for them if the need ever comes up, you know. It is so important for family to be able to talk to somebody that's been through it and been down that road.
Well, you know, I can attest to you guys being there, on call, ready to support. And like I say, we're going to look forward to seeing you, Mr. Eddie, and Randy and Gussie and Cersei and everybody with the Gridiron Heroes in about 2 weeks. I really appreciate you taking time out to be on the call with us and provide us with information. All right, and we'll see you in 2 weeks.
All right, DJ Byron, thank you again for having me on and having us tell a little bit about Gridiron Heroes. Appreciate it.
All right, Eddie, thank you. Yes, sir. Enjoy the rest of your weekend.
All right, thank you. God bless.
We're going to take another break. We are presented by DBAT of Monroe. DBAT for all your baseball and softball training needs, dbatmonroe.com. This hour brought to you by the Riverport Creative Group, riverportcreativegroup.com. This segment was sponsored by Jeremy Hilton and Shelter Insurance of West Monroe. We'll be right back with more Talkin' Sports.
ESPN 97.7. This scene is-
song for the broken hearted.
Welcome back to the program, Talking Sports on ESPN 97.7 FM. B&D, Byron Avery and DJ Davis here with you, your co-hosts for the program.
Yes, sir.
It's time now for our What's Up segment, our version of Where Are They Now? And a person near and dear to DJ's heart on the phone with us. Want to welcome to the program former NLU football player Alan Ricard.
Thanks, guys. How y'all doing? Thanks for having me.
What's up, Alan?
What's up, De Janeiro? How you doing, man?
Yeah, you called my real name out, huh?
Hey, we've been rocking a long time. Why not?
Hey, I feel it, man. I appreciate that, man. I'm glad we was able to get you on this weekend. I know you got a lot of things going on, you know, with your new position over at our old school, you know, ULM. You're a Warhawk now, and we just want to get some information from you and really give you a chance to tell us what you've been up to since we left, you know, we left school back in 98. So tell us a little bit about what's been going on.
Oh, man, to make a very long story short, you know, I was blessed and fortunate enough to go leave ULM, well, Northeast Louisiana at the time, and go on to play NFL football, pro football. Went to the Cowboys, got cut, that didn't work out, and ended up getting picked up, getting a call by the Baltimore Ravens, and was a blessing, ended up playing 7 years for them, played a year with the Detroit Lions, and retired in 08. And after that, man, I kind of just took some time off and tried to figure out, you know, what was going to be the next chapter in my life and just start, you know, doing a little Comcast Sports, kind of doing what you're doing now, man. I was doing a little radio back in Baltimore, did a little Comcast Sports, but, you know, I'm kind of hands-on. I like to be in the trenches, man. You know, I got that fullback mentality in me. So got the little coaching bug, got the little itch, man, and came back, finished my degree in 2013. And end up student coaching that year with Coach Barry, so I'm very appreciative for him allowing me to come along and get my career started in coaching. And after that, man, it just kind of took off, left there, went to New York Jets, did an internship there, followed that up with a D3 school, the apprentice school in Newport News, Virginia, coached there a year. And last year I was at Nicholls State coaching the running backs in Thibodaux, Louisiana. And, you know, to be able to, now I'm here and to be able to come home where, you know, a lot of familiar faces, you know, it's just truly a blessing, just full circle to come, you know, to come back here and be able to have a positive impact on, you know, young kids' lives. So, you know, I'm excited and, you know, I'm very blessed right now, man.
Well, Alan, you played at A-Meet, right?
Absolutely. A-Meet Warriors.
That's right. I worked and lived down in Hammond for a couple of years, so I'm very familiar with that area. So A-Meet and False River and Independence and all of that.
Yes.
A lot of good football played in that area.
Yes, yes, a lot of good talent. And right now they're stocked with talent. And, you know, that's one of my recruiting areas. So I'll be spending a lot of time off in the Tangelo Parish area. So Louisiana just has a lot of talent in general. You know, me and DJ, you know, when we get a chance, we talk. And we talk about this all the time that, you know, if you look at it, the number one recruit in the nation is, you know, the last 5 years has been dominated by Louisiana. So it just goes to show you we got a lot of talent here. And these kids are getting a chance now to showcase their talent even more with all these camps and satellite camps and Nike camps and all this kind of stuff. So it's great opportunities for kids as long as they're willing to put the work in and, you know, make some good decisions and they like good choices because, I tell my guys all the time, you know, it ain't just, you know, it takes more than just being a good football player on the field. You know, it takes some character off the field. That also consists of being a, you know, part of being a good football player is the choices you make in life. So,
I'm just having
fun with it, man.
I'm glad you said that because life is about choices and consequences. Superstar athletes in high school are the best. They go to college. There's a lot of them. But to be able to go to the next level, you have to understand that everybody's good, and then you got to go do something different. So tell us a little bit about your transition from A-Meet to NLU, how you got there, what it was like playing in college, what it was like having to put up with somebody like DJ, and then you know, the differences at each level. Just, I mean, you know, again, people know the differences, the speed,
right,
the athleticism and all of that, but just tell us, give us a few tidbits at each level.
Well, I mean, obviously, you know, starting, you know, I've been playing this game ever since I was in junior high, and every level you have to step the game up. So transitioning from high school to college, I knew I was going to have to take my game, you know, to even to a higher level. And I was a, you know, a very inquisitive guy, you know, always asking questions on how I could get better, you know, and just kind of feeling out what the competition was like, because I had to sit out my first year because I didn't get the ACT score. So I had to sit out my first year. So that was kind of hard. You know, it's a lot of things I went through early on in life that I had that really made me mentally tough at the time. I thought it was the worst thing ever, but, you know, you get older and you look back, it was just a moment, and it was a moment to build me. And, you know, that's how I looked at it. And I got better during that year. And I went into my sophomore year with the mindset that I always had this mindset, I just don't want to sit on the bench. You know, that's just not, you know, that's not a good thing. So I always had the mindset that I was going to do whatever it takes, work hard, you know, put the work in to, you know, not sit on the bench. And, you know, I was blessed, you know, to come in myself in my first year, and I played and started. And the game was faster than high school. And then you got all this, you know, in high school you may just be having more talent than a team. But in college it gets a little more equal level playing field, and even more on the NFL level where, you know, not everybody's great. So now you got to be more fundamentally sound than anything because, you know, you're athletic and your talent alone is not going to do it. So it takes some coaching, and I had great coaching from Bill Schimmick, who was my college running back coach, to Matt Simon, who was my running back coach with the Baltimore Ravens. And I think it helped me, you know, having great coaching is helping me now because I'm able to give them what I've gotten at the highest level and from great guys and great coaches. So they getting some great coaching. They just got to be receptive of it and be willing to, you know, put the work in behind it.
Well, you're back at your alma mater, a team, a school that has struggled. First-year head coach, Matt Viator, a lot of expectation, a lot of hope in the community. A lot of people have said this, you know, the best marketing tool you can have is winning. The community needs ULM, you know, and I think, you know, my big deal, I'm a tech guy, I'm a tech grad. I was the SID there when you were playing at Northeast.
Right.
And DJ were there. My big deal has been the community, you know, if you went to ULM, support ULM. If you went to Tech,
Absolutely.
You know, I live and work in this community. I want both schools to be productive, to be successful. The community needs them. The community has a hard time. You know, they'll say, yeah, you know, we support the Warhawks. But financially, it's hard to get behind a team unless you're winning. I mean, we've seen the success that Tech is having. You know, they kind of go hand in hand. There's a couple of benefactors at Tech that can make a difference financially, of course.
Right.
But winning does a lot of things. That's what we need from ULM, and you guys are the future. So tell me a little bit what to look forward to.
Well, I'm excited about this season, and the reason why I'm excited is just because the staff that Coach Viator has put together. I mean, you got a lot of guys that's really vested into ULM. I mean, Coach Collins, you tell me if he's vested or not. You know, his dad, you know, was a longtime coach here. And then you got Manny Michelle, who's coached here. He has ties to this community, to this place. And, you know, myself, so, and along with Coach Viator, his record speaks for itself. You know, he never had a win or losing season at McNeese. So I think they got the right man in charge. And I think the kids are buying into it now. And you'll see that. You'll see the product that we put on the field. And at the end of the day, that's what you got to put out there. You got to put a good product on the field. And once people see that, they want to be a part of something good, something new and shiny. And we got to do a tremendous job of putting a good product on the field. And I'm very optimistic that we will get this thing done. It's going to be a process, but I think a well worth process. And absolutely, we need the community. You look at any entity, you know, in this world, you know, there's nothing without support and a team. And ULM and Monroe is our team. The whole community is our team. team, and we need everybody for us to be successful and win. And it, at the end of the day, it gives, you know, it's a chance for different communities to come together, get a chance to know one another. And that's, at the end of the day, that's how you make the world a better place, getting to know one another and having experiences and sharing experiences with one another. And I always say this, you know, whatever you introduce a kid to at a young age, is probably that's a pretty much good chance of what he's going to become. So, I mean, bring him to a college, let him come to a football game, and you know, I guarantee you, you know, 15 years from that, from now, or 10 years, whatever grade they're in, you'll see your son or your daughter taking school and education very seriously and wanting and being proactive about getting into school and college. So I think it's an overall win for everybody, not only for ULM, but the Monroe and the community in a whole. And I will, like I told, me and DJ talked about this, I look forward to getting in the community, going to different churches. I see DJ, he does a lot of stuff in the community, walking around, hosting different events and talent shows and stuff like that. And I want to be a part of that because we need our people in the stands. We need all the communities in the stands. And it's a win for Monroe. And, you know, I'm excited about it, and I'm excited about helping, you know, turn this thing into something big. I look at it, you know, when I was here, came on campus in 1995, and now to be back on campus now here in 2016 and just see all of the development and growth from 1995 to here 2016, now it just inspires me, and I look, you know, I can't wait to, you know, look back 15 years from now and see how much growth and development and how much bigger and better ULM and Monroe has gotten. And I want to be a part of that. And, you know, the community should want to be a part of that. So I'm excited and look forward to it.
I know that anytime you have, you know, work days, cleanup days, DJ has already said he's there. Anytime he can volunteer to break a sweat and help out the old program, you just give him a call.
I saw him breaking a sweat across from the stadium a couple weeks ago. He was getting his workout on, man. So I tell you what, DJ, I know the reason why he's trying to stay in good shape, man. He's trying to do a lot of good work in the community, and you got to be in shape, man, to walk around this hot sun because it's hot out there today.
Oh, yeah, it is. And you mentioned something earlier, and it just took me back to, you know, when we would be out there for 2 days and – you know, it's high, like you say. I remember 1 year it was like it averaged 107. When we got there. What I like about where you've gone as far as your career and some of the things you've done, you really, you know, you're not, I guess what they say, you're not too old where the young guys can't relate to. You hadn't been that far removed from what's going on. And and some of the experiences you had, I mean, you think about it, I mean, who else could talk about? Who else could talk to a kid about overcoming obstacles and going through what they need to go through to get better than somebody like Alan Ricard? Because, like you say, you said it earlier. You went to – I remember when you went to Dallas. We was all excited. And then they cut you. We was like, wait, hold on. What happened? But then you go on, you know, for the next almost 6 or 7 years – And you do what you got to do. I mean, because if it wasn't, I'm be honest with you, and you know, I'm saying this not because we go back, but I mean, you know, Jamal Lewis get over 2,000 yards 1 year, and I knew why he got the 2,000 yards because you was his lead back. You know what I'm saying? So you have a lot that you can give to those kids, man, and I'm really looking forward to seeing what you guys put together. So like I said, man, we really appreciate you being on, man, and. You know, you got my personal number, so you know we'll talk way after the show. But like I say, we'll get out there in the community and do some things, man, so we can get people back supporting the Mohawks, man. So we appreciate you being on, Alan, man.
Man, thanks, man. Thanks to both of you guys. I enjoyed it, man. Anytime you want me back on, just you got my number. Just hit me up.
We'll get you back on after some of those wins.
Gotcha.
Absolutely. Look forward to it.
All right, man.
Enjoy the rest of your weekend. We're going to take a break when we come back.
Nice talking to you.
You too. When we come back, we'll have Doug Ireland from the Louisiana Sports Hall of Fame. Hit us up on the Car King Hotline and Pulpwood Producers text line, 888-993-7762, the Glassworks of West Monroe Twitter feed, at TSports977FM. Go to our Assurance Financial Facebook page, facebook.com/TalkinSports977FM. We'll be back with more Talking Sports.
Hey, ESPN 97.7.
Welcome back to Talking Sports, ESPN 97.7 FM. B&D, Byron and DJ, your co-hosts for the program. Want to welcome to the show for the first time a good friend of mine, SID at Northwestern State University, and the director of the Louisiana Sports Hall of Fame, Mr. Doug Ireland. Doug, welcome in.
Hey, Byron, how y'all doing?
Doing great today,
real
brother.
Real good.
You don't really have anything to do today, but I appreciate you taking your time and coming on the show. Actually, a huge day for you, a huge weekend, as tonight is the ceremony for the induction of 8 new members of the Louisiana Sports Hall of Fame.
Well, actually, the number's 11 when you count the 2 Journalism Award winners and the Dave Dixon Louisiana Sports Leadership Award winner.
Absolutely forgot about those. I'm sorry. So I know a big night for you. Two names very familiar to North Louisiana would be P.J. Brown, who played at Winfield High School and Louisiana Tech and played in the NBA, won a championship with the Boston Celtics, and the A-Train. And, again, you know, Doug, I'm getting old, so names just leave me every now and then.
It's Big Anthony.
Anthony Thomas
played at Winfield High School, played at Michigan, and then in the NFL. So those two, a lot of people know. But we've also got Janice Joseph Richard, played at Louisiana College and coached at Xavier. Red Swanson from Southeastern, they're one of their football coaches. Gentleman Dave Malarcher played and managed in the Negro Leagues, and then the others that you were talking about.
Well, you know,
you've got some North Louisiana representatives. There you go.
Go ahead, Doug.
And Red Swanson is from Quitman.
Oh yeah.
And coached at Oak Grove High School, also in West Monroe.
Huh.
So you do have a pretty good little I-20/167 corridor going on this year with PJ and Anthony from Winfield, and PJ having played at Louisiana Tech. Ben Sheets lives in Monroe. He played at ULM, and then Red Swanson, born and raised in Jackson Parish and Quitman, and coached at Oak Grove High School and coached at West Monroe a little bit too.
And I can't believe I didn't mention Ben Sheets. I don't know why, but just, again, Doug, it's that age thing.
I understand.
But yeah, Ben Sheets, huge impact on North Louisiana. Team USA, Milwaukee Brewers, striking out, I think it was 20 in one game against the Bulldogs. So great class for tonight's induction.
Yeah, they're all very gracious people, very excited. The family members of Janice Joseph Richard, Alvin Malarcher, or rather Dave Malarcher, and Red Swanson are just gracious people. And this is just a great group of humans who also happen to be very accomplished competitively. Then our Dave Dixon Louisiana Sports Leadership Award winner is Dr. Julian Bales, who is a neurologist of world-renowned neurologist, neurosurgeon. He's actually one of the handful of people who has been a huge proponent of head safety in sports. In fact, he was played by Alec Baldwin in last year's movie Concussion. A guy who's really been at the forefront of making sports safer. And then the two journalists, one not as well known as the other, Bob Tompkins is the writer, 40-year career as a sports writer, multiple-time national, or rather a state sports writer of the year, based in Alexandria for the last 30-some-odd years. And then Jim Hawthorne, a name that's very well known anywhere in Louisiana, the voice of LSU sports for 3 decades, and is just retired, and he actually got his start right here in Natchitoches as a student at Northwestern.
Yeah, Bob Thompson, I know him very well from my days in that business. Great writer, great guy. Saw him at a lot of LSWA events. But Doug, tell us a little bit more, other than the inductees and other than the big ceremony tonight. I've encouraged on this show many times that if someone hasn't had a chance, they need to make it to Natchitoches to see the Louisiana Sports Hall of Fame, because there are just so many names that you'll recognize that you had no idea they had ties to Louisiana.
Well, first of all, it's a world-class museum. It is, in fact, today, in literally just a few minutes, Lieutenant Governor and officials from the State Museum System and the Smithsonian are opening a six-week exhibit called Hometown Teams in the exhibit area of our museum. But it's a two-story, 27,000-square-foot building. It has literally items from corner to corner. We like to say from Lake Providence to Lake Charles, from Ida to Grand Isle, the Louisiana State Sports Hall of Fame brings our history to our people. And, you know, it's open 6 days every week. Any day but Monday, it's open until 4:30. It's just $5 to get in. And it is world-class architecture, world-class museum presentation, and world-class sports culture in Louisiana being celebrated. So it's well worth the trip. And there's so much more to do in Natchitoches than just our museum. We certainly would encourage folks to come and enjoy this wonderful community that was just last year selected as the best small town in the South by readers of USA Today.
Right. You know, and again, a lot of people know, a lot of people in Louisiana know of Natchitoches for the lights and all that at Christmas. But I tell you what, if that's what gets you there, I would say make plans. If you're going to go down for that, be there long enough to make sure you go to the Hall of Fame Museum. Throw out a few names that might surprise people. You know, I mentioned Bill Russell earlier, who was born in Louisiana. And so a lot of people that we don't know of that have ties. Throw out just a couple of names that might shock somebody.
Well, Bill Russell's not a good example for our Hall of Fame because he's not in it.
I mean, just the people he's from here.
Right. But, oh, my goodness. You've got almost an endless list of you go to any major sports market in the country, and there are ties to Louisiana among their greatest players ever. And where do you start with names like that? Golly, I'm going to just dump through the last few years here. Let's see. Warrick Dunn, Michael Brooks, of course, lives right there in Ruston, Marshall Faulk, Willie Rofe, Hal Sutton, Brian Mitchell, Pat Swilling, Ronnie Este, Chuck Finley, Frank Lewis, Albert Bell, Mark Duper, of course, Leon Ballmore goes without saying, Will Clark, Hollis Conway, Billy Joe Dupree, Lee Smith, Eddie Delahousse, Sam Mills, Robert Parrish. That's just this century alone, some of the names that have been inducted. You don't turn around in this museum without seeing somebody you've heard of, seeing a story that you may not have known about, and it is just well worth the trip.
I mean, Danny Abramowitz, Y.A. Tittle. I mean, you just go back, and there's just so many people that you just never knew had ties to Louisiana. But, Doug, I know you've been fortunate enough to work with that organization along with being the SID, Media Relations Director, at Northwestern State, worked with some great people. You're just living the dream, aren't you?
Well, it is an honor, a privilege, and a thrill every year to get to do this and get to know these folks. And that's the beautiful thing about this weekend is if you participate in this weekend, we have some free events. Kids Clinic this morning was free. We have a Thursday night reception. It was free. And you get a chance to literally meet these people, have a conversation with them. Sometimes if you're here for the whole weekend, relationships develop. It's a unique opportunity to bask in the glow of Louisiana sports greatness and get to meet these people, not just see them walk 30 feet from you, but actually get to engage them in conversation. And it is just truly a delight to be associated with it.
Doug, I appreciate you taking time on a busy day to come on the show. Miss talking to you, buddy. So, but hopefully we'll reach out to you and be able to communicate again soon.
Be right here when you call. Appreciate it, guys. A lot of fun talking on your show.
All right, and then tell us the website and how to keep up with any social media with the Hall of Fame.
LASportsHall.com is the website, LASportsHall.com. And the Twitter handle, which will be very active tonight, is the same thing, LA Sports Hall, I believe.
All right. Doug, have a great rest of the weekend. and enjoy tonight's ceremonies.
Thank you very much. Appreciate you guys calling. Have fun.
All right.
No problem.
Bye-bye.
We're going to take another break. When we come back, Josh Tolleson talking American League Baseball. You're listening to Talking Sports.
We're on ESPN 97.7.
Welcome back to the program, Talking Sports, ESPN 97.7 FM, B&D, Byron Avery and DJ Davis, your co-hosts for the program. DJ, it's time to talk a little Major League Baseball.
Well, I can tell you, we did National League last week, so I guess we'll have our expert, subject matter expert, come in and tell us a little bit about the American League. He may not be as excited as he was last week, but we'll find out, see what those Cubs are doing.
So, right to it, our SME, our subject matter expert, Josh Tolleson, back on the program. Welcome back, Josh.
Well, thanks for having me back, Byron and Coach. As always, it's wonderful to be back on the show, and I'm ready to dive into some American League Baseball.
Well, let's go right into it. What do you think about the AL so far? But I said let's dive into it real quick. I just have to ask, what's going on in Chicago? Four losses in a row, and you got rid of Derrick Rose.
Well, it's so funny because normally when a team loses four in a row, you know, they think, oh, it's not a big deal. But, you know, the Cubs have set the bar so high this season. You know, when they lose four games, it's big news. But, you know, they did pull out the win last night, you know, and, you know, I think despite the fact they lost four straight, they were in each ball game. They were competitive. So I think they'll be okay.
All right. So we got that out of the way. So let's jump on the American League.
All right. Yeah, American League, it's been very interesting because you have three divisions, and two of the divisions, the American League East and American League West, for a while were pretty neck and neck. And as I'm sure we'll talk about here shortly, it appears the Texas Rangers have created some separation as far as who's the favorite to win the American League as of June 25th. They do have the best record in the American League at 47-27. So when you're looking at the best teams, the teams that are really hitting their stride right now, I would say the Texas Rangers are atop that list. Then you also, of course, in the East, you have the Orioles and Red Sox, and then Cleveland in the American League Central.
Yeah, you know, Cleveland, and here we go, Believe Land. They got their championship in the NBA. I don't even want to talk about that, but you've got Baltimore in the East. Baltimore, the typically New York Yankee-held division. The Yankees are actually in fourth place, just above Tampa Bay, with only 36 wins. I say only 36, that just means they're only six games back of the division leader in Baltimore. Cleveland in first place in the Central over Kansas City by only four wins, Cleveland at 42-30. But then the Rangers, and I'm sitting here looking at the standings, and it's still disappointing for me to see Texas and Houston, both in the AL and both in the AL West. So I just, you know, Texas has two teams. They need to both be, and they need to be in separate divisions. But the Rangers, as you said, in first place, best record in the American League overall. We're running short on time. We've got about 8 minutes left, which is actually a long time in radio land. But at midseason, we're, you know, July, first couple of weeks in July, we'll have the All-Star break. Give us a rundown of what you think the awards will be, the Player of the Year, Cy Young Award, Manager of the Year, that type of stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. First, I'll start with the American League Manager of the Year. And we just talked about the Texas Rangers. I think that Jeff Bannister's done a really good job with the Texas Rangers up to this point. So when you take into consideration, he lost his ace, Yu Darvish, at the in the offseason. And he was out, and actually he's back on the disabled list. So when you take in the fact that he lost Yu Darvish, he lost Josh Hamilton to a season-ending injury. And then also, he's had several of his key players banged up. You look at Adrian Beltre, he's been banged up. Chu, the right fielder, he's been banged up as well. So despite the fact that the Rangers have been bitten by the injury bug. He has managed to keep his team focused and on track, and you know they're arguably the team to beat in the American League. So for manager of the year, I would go with Jeff Banister. And then I'll actually stay with the Rangers for the next award. I would have it be the American League Rookie of the Year. I would have Nomar Mazzara as my selection for the American League Rookie of the Year. When he was called up earlier this season, he made an immediate impact, and he's actually been plugged in into the middle of the lineup, which has, like, you know, they have plenty of great offensive power there with Ian Desmond, with Adrian Beltre when healthy. But he's plugged in. He's hit 11 home runs. He's driven in 30, which is not too bad for a rookie at the midway point. So I would say Nomar Mazzara would be my Rookie of the Year. And then for the Cy Young, it's pretty much been a slam dunk in my opinion. My cubby heart kind of hurts when I say this, but Chris Sale with the White Sox would be my Cy Young Award candidate. He's 12-2 with a 2.83 ERA. He has struck out 102 batters, which gives him a whip of 0.99. He is actually in the top five for American League pitchers in wins, strikeouts, innings pitched, ERA, and whip. So he would be my Cy Young. And then to conclude the awards, for MVP, I will keep it in the state of Texas. I will say Jose Altuve would be my most valuable player with the Houston Astros. You talk about a complete ball player. He's a five-tool player. You know, he hits for average. He's batting 340 with 12 home runs and 41 runs batted in and 18 stolen bases. So the man can run. He can hit home runs. He can hit for average. And he's a solid defender at second base. So he would be my pick for the MVP so far.
You know, to hear somebody with 18 stolen bases, you know, I remember back in the days of Ricky Henderson and those guys with the Cardinals. You know, again, here's my age because the name just left me. I had it on the tip of my tongue. Guy who stole 130 bases for the Cardinals one year.
So Willie Wilson?
No, played with Terry Pendleton.
Back
in Utah. Yeah, and Ozzie Smith. Golly. Tabor, you bound to know who I'm talking about.
Vince Coleman.
There you go.
There you go.
Sir. Vince Coleman. I mean, the guy had 130 stolen bases one year. You know, now this guy's got 18 at basically close to the halfway point of the season. So, you know, if you're going to steal. You know, like they say, when you leave first, run like you stole something because you're trying. But I like your picks. Let's switch over to the National League real quick. We have a few minutes left. Would you say is Jake Arrieta your Cy Young candidate there?
Actually, you know, as good as Arrieta's been, I think without a doubt, Clayton Kershaw would no question be the Cy Young winner. I mean, you cannot deny the fact that. Yeah, he's been on a historic pace so far.
Yeah, and you know, with him and Bumgarner both wanting to be in the home run contest, that's you know, just they're just studs. But anyway, I can't say that about Bumgarner because he's a giant. I'm obligated to be a giant hater.
Yeah, by default,
you know, you can't love the Dodgers and even have any affinity for the Giants at all. So any Cubs in your postseason awards at all?
Well, I would say, you know, like I said, Kershaw would be my Cy Young. As good as Joe Maddon has been as manager, I mean, I would probably, as much as it pains me to say it, I probably would go with Dusty Baker so far for the manager of the year just because of the turnaround that the Nationals have enjoyed. I mean, if you look where they were a year ago with Matt Williams, I mean, you can't deny the fact that Dusty's really turned that ball club around.
All right. Your National League MVP, I know we didn't talk about this, but your National League MVP
Yeah, man, this may be a little controversial because I know how some people feel about pitchers being MVPs, but I would actually consider Kershaw my MVP as well as Cy Young.
Couldn't argue with you. And then
yeah.
Your rookie?
Oh man, that's a good one. I mean, there's so many good rookies that are in the National League right now. I mean, there's a couple, and my Cubby bias may show here, but the Cubs got a couple of good ones going so far. I mean, keep an eye on Wilson Contreras. He was just called up a week ago, but you know, he's already played multiple positions and he's hit, several home runs. So he's really solid, the guy to keep an eye out for. And there's a few guys out west that would keep an eye out as well. But as far as, it's hard to pinpoint one rookie in the National League just because it's been such an even playing field.
Yeah. Going back to the Rangers, real quick, former Ranger Vladimir Guerrero was in the stands last night to watch his son hit his first pro baseball home run.
Yeah, that's pretty incredible. When we talk about, Hall of Famers, you can't argue the fact that, from a numbers perspective, Vladimir Guerrero, in my opinion, is a Hall of Famer. And for him to be able to see his son, who's most likely on his way to a successful pro career, for him to get his first home run, that had to be a very special moment for Vlad and, for baseball fans as well, not only in Montreal, but also in Texas and Baltimore, and also in Anaheim, where he also played as well.
Well, his son, Vlad Jr., played rookie level the Bluefield Blue Jays. He's in the Blue Jays system. He's their number five prospect. Made his pro debut, had his first pro hit, and his first pro home run. So, big day for Dad and Vlad Jr. So, Josh, we're out of time. Thanks for coming on again. We'll have you back. But how can people keep up with you?
All right, buddy. Thanks for having me on. You guys have a great rest of the weekend.
All right. How can we keep up with you?
All right. Just keep me up on the 318 Now podcast. Check me out on Facebook. And also 318 Now podcast on iTunes and as well as on Google Play Music.
All right. That's it for Talking Sports. I want to thank our broadcast partners, Car King, Pulpwood Producers, Glassworks of West Monroe, Greg Phillips State Farm Insurance, he is a good neighbor, the Riverport Creative Group, D. Bat of Monroe, Gina Wilbanks, Allstate Insurance, Assurance Financial, and Jeremy Hilton, Shield of Shelter Insurance. As always, thank you to John Tabor back in the studio.
Tabor.
Thanks, DJ.
Look, thanks to all the guests that we've had on.
Absolutely. Man. It was a great day today. We are in the Coldwell Banker Group 1 Realty Studios here in West Monroe. We'll see you again next week on Talkin' Sports
on ESPN 97.7.
Thanks for listening to the best of Talkin' Sports with Byron. To listen to the show live, tune in every Saturday to ESPN977.com or subscribe to the show in iTunes, on Stitcher, or at redpeachsports.com.